In PM Tonight, an extensive interview with the politician who threatened last year to press the nuclear button on Rupert Murdoch. What does Vince Cable think now?
It is a little bit like the end of a dictatorship when everybody suddenly discovers they were against the dictator.
Hear the interview in full in a moment. Rupert and James Murdoch will give evidence next week to MPs. Also tonight, five people are dead. How widespread is the distilling of illegal alcohol?
I heard many shops, they have alcohol which not been produced legally. Maybe they find the price of the alcohol is too expensive.
We'll ask whether credit agencies have too much power and not enough responsibility. Michael Buchanan will report from Lashkargah. And we'll take you behind the scenes at Olympic preparations in the Lake District.
Colin Callop, lightweight.
Joseph Derrigair, welterweight.
DJ Mocky, featherweight.
Jake Akedu, super heavyweight.
With the BBC News tonight, Zeb Soans.
Within the past half hour, Rupert Murdoch and his son James have said they will appear before MPs next week to answer questions about the phone hacking scandal. The Culture Select Committee had issued summonses for both men after they initially said they were unavailable to attend a hearing on Tuesday. Rebecca Brooks, the chief executive of News International and the former news editor of the News of the World, had already agreed to attend. From Westminster, here's our political correspondent, Vicky Young.
The Culture Committee's decision to increase the pressure on the Murdochs by issuing a summons has had the desired effect. In a dramatic turnaround, both Rupert and James Murdoch will now go to the House of Commons on Tuesday to face questions alongside News International's chief executive, Rebecca Brooks. She's already indicated to the committee that there may be some aspects of the phone hacking case that she won't be able to discuss in detail because of the ongoing police investigation. But the News Corporation executives have clearly decided that in the current climate, cooperating with MPs is the best approach.
The News of the World's former executive editor, Neil Wallace, is being questioned by detectives investigating the phone hacking allegations. He was arrested at his home in West London this morning on suspicion of conspiring to intercept communications. Mr. Wallace also served as deputy editor to Andy Coulson. Police investigating an explosion in Lincolnshire in which five men were killed have said they believe alcohol was being produced illegally at the site. It's thought the men were from Eastern Europe. The explosion happened yesterday evening in Boston, from where Danny Savage reports.
After several hours sifting through the burnt-out industrial unit where the five men died, Lincolnshire police confirmed what everybody locally had been suggesting. The lock-up, where a fire had raged so fiercely it buckled the metal doors, was probably being used for making bootleg alcohol. Outside the units lie sacks of potatoes, an ingredient in distilling vodka-like spirits. It's understood the five dead men were all migrant workers from Eastern Europe. Police now have the grim task of identifying them and tracing their relatives.
Four people have been killed in a suicide bombing at a mosque in southern Afghanistan during memorial prayers for President Karzai's half-brother. Ahmed Wali Karzai was shot dead by a bodyguard on Tuesday. A senior cleric and a child are said to be among those who died in the attack in Kandahar. A package of austerity measures designed to tackle Italy's huge deficit have been approved by the country's Senate. The government is attempting to rush the proposals through Parliament to restore market confidence and avoid the need for an international bailout. The government has watered down its proposals to reduce the number of Coast Guard centres around the UK. The Transport Secretary, Philip Hammond, told the Commons that two of those scheduled to close would now stay open, and plans for most centres to close at night had been dropped. Here's Joe Coburn.
Nearly 2,000 submissions were received during the government's consultation on plans to reorganise the UK's Coast Guard stations. Claims were made that the proposed closure of 10 rescue coordination centres wouldn't just result in a loss of jobs, but also expertise and local knowledge. Today's announcement that two fewer stations will shut than originally planned will be seen as a partial government U-turn. Alongside one big operations centre in the Southampton-Portsmouth area, a remaining eight satellites will operate 24 hours a day, rather than just in daylight hours, with a disaster recovery backup facility at Dover and a small station continuing to run in London.
The Kenyan government has said it will now allow those fleeing neighbouring Somalia to use a new refugee camp. More than 1,000 people a day have been crossing the border to escape the combined effects of the drought and conflict in their home country. The earliest surviving Jane Austen manuscript has been sold at auction for nearly £1 million. The 68 handwritten pages for an unfinished novel, The Watsons, are thought to have been written in 1804. It was bought by an unidentified institution rather than a private bidder.
5 past 5. On Tuesday's programme, we had all sorts of unintentional fun trying to work out whether three senior News Corporation figures would appear before the Commons Culture, Media and Sport Committee next week. We were told that James Murdoch, Rupert Murdoch and Rebecca Brooks would turn up next Tuesday. Then we weren't sure. The man who chairs the committee joined us live to say he'd been told yes they would, and then he wasn't so sure either. Here we are, 2 days later, and for most of the day we haven't been sure. Neither was there any certainty about what powers, if any, the committee had to force the Murdochs to appear. Well, in the past half hour, a bit more clarity. Our chief political correspondent, Norman Smith, has kindly accepted our invitation to take up the story. Why do we have the sort of dance of the seven veils today about their possible appearance, Norman?
Well, it has been another utterly extraordinary day in a story that has continued to twist hour by hour, with a statement issued in the last half hour by News Corporation, which says, and I quote it here, "We are in the process of writing to the Select Committee," that's the Culture Select Committee, "with the intention that Mr. James Murdoch and Mr. Rupert Murdoch will attend next Tuesday's meeting." Now that, after this morning, when letters were received by the Select Committee from both Murdochs saying effectively that they would not be coming. After that, we had a sort of procedures could be instituted to force the two Murdochs to attend, and no one seemed very clear that they absolutely could be forced to attend. One committee clerk lamented to me, "We don't have a snatch squad to send." Now, the Murdochs have themselves decided to attend voluntarily. And what will be fascinating is whether this is a defensive move in that they feel under enormous political pressure and they fear the sort of headlines they might attract if they do not attend and therefore for that reason have decided, yes, we will have to back down and come, or whether this is part of an offensive fight back and we can expect to see the old abrasive, tough Rupert Murdoch taking no prisoners, taking on all the questions. And it is going to be an extraordinary piece of political theatre, unprecedented. Really, here you have two of the most powerful media moguls in the world going face to face with a Select Committee. One other thing which I think will be fascinating about it is the extent to which the MPs come out of the shadow of the Murdochs, because for years, I mean almost for decades, politicians have feared the might of the Murdoch Empire. Now we will see actually how far they have moved beyond that because of the whole B Sky B saga and are willing to confront them face to face without fear.
First and full coverage next Tuesday in PM, right here, of course. I just wonder, will they answer all the questions, do you think, or will there be a lot of referring to lawyers?
Huge unknown, Eddie. If we look at previous examples, we go back to the Maxwell brothers when they were summoned before the Social Security Committee on the pensions issue. They basically hid behind lawyers and long pregnant silences when they refused to answer any questions. And the result of that was a long process of legal action outside Parliament, obviously, and the whole process got nowhere. It was just left hanging. Now, that is one possibility on Tuesday. It is possible that the two Murdochs will simply refuse to answer questions because of the potential legal entanglements. I wonder, given the nature of Rupert Murdoch, given his abrasive style, whether actually, rather than hiding behind lawyers, he will come out fighting. That's going to be one of the most extraordinary things. How will he handle this? Because if he does refuse to answer questions, it is possible that the committee could choose to take it one step further and refer the matter back to the House of Commons and say Mr. Murdoch was in contempt because he'd refused to respond to their questions. So, you know, the committee wanted to ratchet it up further, they could still. But I have a sort of gut instinct that Mr. Murdoch, Rupert Murdoch, is the sort of man who will want to take on his critics in unarmed verbal combat.
Norman Smith at Westminster, thank you. In December last year, the business secretary, Vince Cable, was stripped of his powers on media regulation after he told undercover reporters that he had declared war on Rupert Murdoch. What does he think tonight? In an interview recorded just before that confirmation the Murdochs would appear before MPs next week, Vince Cable spoke at length to PM. Vince Cable, with reference to the Murdoch empire, what has life taught you over the past 7 months?
Well, I think it's to play a long game and not be too distressed by short-term problems, which undoubtedly I had around Christmas. But I think, you know, when I now reflect on it, I mean, there is, I suppose, some private satisfaction in discovering that the rest of the country and Parliament now agrees with me. But I think more important, I did in the period when I was responsible for this problem, I think do something important, which is that I did refer the bid to Ofcom. There were very strong advice, both inside and outside Whitehall, to just let it through on the grounds there wasn't really a case to answer and there would be strong legal opposition, legal reviews and so on. But I took independent advice, referred it to Ofcom. That in turn recommended that the bid referred to the Competition Commission, which was where eventually 7 months later we finished up. So I do feel, you know, had I not done that, of course, the whole thing would now be a fait accompli.
Mm. There are a lot of people who give you credit for forecasting the bursting of the credit bubble. Did you foresee in your own way the bursting of the Murdoch bubble?
Well, I didn't see it in precisely those terms, but what did worry me, as the minister who was then responsible, I was worried about the problems for the plurality of the media when you have one very, very dominant player in the newspaper business and potentially in television too. And I think everybody's now come to that point, and indeed one of the outcomes of this review, which is going to take place under a judge, is that it will be looking at media law and regulation and competition, at cross-ownership, at the issue of plurality, which is currently a very vague concept in law. And this all now needs to be sorted out.
Given what we know now, and given that people are concerned beyond media plurality, is it your belief that there's now not a takeover which you can prejudice? Is it your belief that News Corporation are fit and proper people to own the bit of B-Sky they own?
Well, that isn't a matter for ministers to resolve. That is a matter for Ofcom to make a judgment, and I believe they are seeking to make that judgment.
Do you have an opinion on it?
Well, it's very easy to see that there has been a lot of malpractice, but, you know, the British law operates on the principle of innocent until proved guilty, and there are technical judgments which have to be made by Ofcom around the fit and proper person rule. I think what we can say politically is that the fit and proper person's rule may itself need to be revisited. It's very difficult to invoke and hasn't been invoked very often in the past. I think the one occasion it was pointing out to me, I think it was a director of a football club on a rape conviction when he applied for a radio license. It was slightly odd. I mean, these things don't happen very often and we may need to revisit the rule, but I don't want to get drawn in on the basis of accusations to say categorically whether they're fit and proper person. That's the job of Ofcom.
We were talking in our programme last night asking where some MPs were, many MPs standing up yesterday, as you know, criticising the Murdoch Empire. We were asking where they were previously, perhaps even as recently as 2 weeks ago, as someone who threatened to press the nuclear button 7 months ago. How do you reflect on that and how MPs have relationships with the media?
Well, I suppose I reflect on it philosophically. It is a little bit like the end of a dictatorship when everybody suddenly discovers they were against the dictator. There's a little bit of that atmosphere. But in terms of the, you know, whether any abuses were committed, and in terms of the relationship between the press, politicians and the police, I mean, that is a matter that is now going to be investigated under the judge with evidence under oath, and any improprieties involved certainly need to be pursued through that route.
Yes, but you lost a bit of your job, if you like, as a result of saying 7 months ago what a lot of people are saying now about Rupert Murdoch.
Well, I reflect philosophically on that. I told the House of Commons this morning I don't judge my role in government by the size of my empire, but by the quality of the decisions I make and the judgments I make, and I want to be judged by that.
Yesterday, David Cameron called for greater transparency in politicians dealing with the media. Do you agree with that thought?
Well, clearly there must be transparency. We're now, I think, trying to assess what that actually means. Should every cup of coffee between an MP or a minister and journalists be declared. I think that there has to be much more openness about it, but I think what we're discussing now is where the lines are drawn between pettiness and the necessary openness.
Where would you draw them? And I mean, without wishing to go back to the experience you had in your constituency surgery, there are all sorts of thoughts about where the line might be, and I'm interested to hear your thoughts.
Well, at the moment, we have to be very transparent about a lot of things. My own declaration as a minister declares all the various local charities of which I'm a patron, for example. Any financial interest is scrupulously declared by people who have ministerial jobs, and of course members of parliament also have to declare their interests.
Let's say you and I had dinner tonight. I don't know what your plans are, but let's say we did, and we talked about politics and the BBC and blah blah blah. Should you tell people that we had dinner and what we talked about?
It is a tricky one. I think in principle, if that situation arose, we would both have to know in advance that those were the rules of the game. I think if I were to have six dinners with you in 6 weeks, people might wonder quite what was going on. And so I think the starting point is that transparency is right.
We still don't know what the Prime Minister discussed over dinner with Rebecca Brooks and James Murdoch 2 days after you were stripped of your powers, and of course while the B Sky B bid was active. Shouldn't he start by being transparent with us about that?
Well, I think the proposals about transparency relate to future conduct. I think applying these judgments retrospectively would be very problematic. I mean, an awful lot of people have had dinners with large numbers of other people in the media and so on over past years. It's not going to be sensible or practical whether or not it's right to try and exhume all the details of their conversation. So I don't think it's realistic to talk about it. I think we've got to get it right in future.
Well, getting it right in future is one thing, but on this particular instance, I mean, aren't the public entitled to ask, for all the reasons I don't need to explain to you, what did you three talk about?
Well, I think as a public interest journalist, that's a question you might want to put rather than for me to put it.
But I'm wondering whether you think Mr. Cameron should start by being transparent with us about what happened at that meeting.
I don't think it's for me to make that call. I mean, he has been very clear in the last few days. He's been very upfront in condemning the conduct of News International.
He's condemned other people's conduct, but won't tell us what he talked about.
I think he has acknowledged that mistakes have been made by his own party, by the Labour Party and others in their dealings with the media. But I think what he chooses to say about that particular conversation is totally down to him.
Are you pleased with how he's dealing with it?
I'm very pleased with the way that this has worked through and the way this has been dealt with by Parliament on a cross-party basis.
What about Mr. Cameron's dealing with
it? Well, he's played a positive part ensuring in the last few days that we've now got a cross-party consensus on establishing an inquiry, the withdrawal of the bid on which we all voted, and on charting a course to improve legislation on the media and media regulation.
If we were having dinner tonight, I'd probably say to you, you were a bit lukewarm on the radio today about all that.
I'm trying not to be destructive. I think there are some positive things that have come out of a very bad episode, a terrible episode in which a lot of innocent people have been very badly hurt. And I think I'm trying to look positively about how we can get something good out of this.
Just one final thought. Do you know whether one or other of the Murdochs can be forced to appear before the Culture Select Committee next week? There's some confusion about the rules.
I think probably in theory they can be, but I'm not familiar with the details of parliamentary procedure. I think what I did discover was that Mr. James Murdoch was asking the committee to fit round his diary, and I think most of us would feel it should probably be the other way around.
Vince Cable talking to PM. It's 5:19. Zeb has the headlines.
Rupert Murdoch and his son James have agreed to appear before MPs investigating the phone hacking scandal. They've been issued with summonses after initially saying they were unavailable for the hearing next week. The chief executive of News International and former editor of the News of the World, Rebecca Brooks, had agreed to attend.